So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Engadget podcast. I'm Reviews editor Sherlyn Low, and my usual co-host Devendra Hardwar is off on break this week, taking a well-deserved vacation. So joining me as special guest co-host is one of my favorite people on the team, Jessica Condit, our senior editor. Hey, Jess.
Hello. Wonderful to be here.
Thanks again for joining us today. I am excited for today's topic. So today we decided we wanted to do a special topical episode for you guys. And it's something I've been thinking about doing for a while. And basically today we're going to talk all about the way tech can affect your dating, your relationships, or your breakup process, and how best to navigate that. So think about things like all the settings you need to immediately change right after a breakup, or Google Photos. Is there a way to stop them from showing you photos of your ex? Or when is it okay to, you know, go on Instagram Grid Official? Before we get to all of that, though, please, if you're liking the podcast, leave us a review on iTunes, subscribe on all the platforms that you get podcasts on, and if you have thoughts, questions, or any feedback, send us an email at podcast@engadget.com. We also live stream the behind-the-scenes making of this show every Thursday, typically at 10 a.m. Eastern on the Engadget YouTube channel, so make sure you mark your calendars for that as well. So like I said, we have a topical episode today. We're going to talk about dating and tech, especially because it is the holiday season. I know people don't tend to like link the two together, you know, holiday season and dating, but think about it, right? A lot of people go into holiday season, you've just gone home with your significant other maybe to have Thanksgiving dinner or, you know, Zoomed your family for the first time, who knows? I have been broken up with right before Thanksgiving, just so you know, but anyway...
Are you traumatized? Can you like no longer have turkey now?
Oh, no, I enjoy it now. It's like okay, the good. Taste of misery is excellent.
So sweet.
Yes. Joining us today to talk all about that, we're so fortunate to have this guest, Dr. Nerdlove himself, dating coach and relationship advice columnist, Harris O'Malley. Hi, Harris.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. I'm sorry that was such a long intro to get to you.
No. This is a time when relationships really start to get strained because just the stress of the holidays, stress of meeting family, possibly for the first time. And as we get to the end of the year, suddenly everybody's starting to really think about, okay, is this working for me? Is this what I want? Is this time for a change? And it gets harder to ignore those really pressing questions.
Yeah. And so like one of your columns I remember reading was about how now in the pandemic too, a lot of people have been forced into de facto long distance relationships, right? If they were mm-hmm. not living together before the pandemic. And so a lot of relationships used to already be heavily conducted through social media, technology, phone, whatever. Now, even more so, a lot of people have been forced into that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so even like people who live in the same city, but they're quarantining hard and really isolating, are finding themselves having to treat this like a long-distance relationship when they didn't have to before, and that's making things difficult because they're not used to having that, like, not having that in-person connection. And that really kind of takes its toll after a while.
We'll get into, I think, maybe some of, like, how to navigate being in a relationship where you have to conduct most of your interactions online. But I think we wanted to start talking first about people who might be getting ready or getting over a breakup. And we kind of have, I think some of us have personal experiences to share. But just in general, Harris, do you have any advice for someone that might be, you know, getting, you know, just broken up with or recently broken up and the steps that they need to take right now on their phones? Like, what must they do on their phones, their laptops, their homes?
Yeah, one of the things I tend to tell people a lot when they break up with someone is to take what I call the nuclear option, which is you want to cut ties immediately. Not because, you know, they broke up with you or you broke up with them and now they're dead to you and you shall never speak their name again, but because it's really hard to heal when you're constantly having that, like, that, hey, you just broke up, thrown in your face. And so when you have, you know, you're looking at your phone, you're going through your photos, and Apple suddenly throws like the For You section, there you are with your ex. Suddenly it's like, oh, okay, cool, you're getting stabbed with a tiny little knife all over again. So one of the things you want to do is start just not necessarily blocking, but definitely muting or unfollowing them across all forms of social media. Mm-hmm. Because that's just going to be one of those times of, because of the algorithm, because you've interacted so much, they're going to show up in your timeline a lot, and that's going to hurt. Mm-hmm. And as soon as they start dating someone else, or even start talking to somebody else, or just having a good time with someone else, that's going to feel deeply, deeply personal. It's going to, even if it's not, it's going to feel like it's directly aimed at you, and it's just going to break your heart all over again. So muting them, unfollowing them, just finding ways of putting them aside, at least for a little while, until you've had a chance to heal, goes a very, very long way from keeping yourself from dealing with unnecessary pain.
And like, that's not weak. That's just smart. It doesn't look bad to anyone else when you do that. It really is just protecting yourself, getting out of the situation. I mean, it feels like you're taking control in a way, which is a good feeling when you're in the middle of a breakup.
I love that that's your perspective, Jess, because the way I think about it is I don't want to do the nuclear option because I feel like it's so mean, or it's so, like, I think some people, when the breakup is fresh, hope for reconciliation still. So I think when you do that nuclear option, people maybe feel like, but what if we get back together again or something, right? And that might feel hard for them. For me, the difference between a block and a mute or an unfollow, there's like minute differences to it that I think could make the person trying to protect themselves feel a little bit better. So maybe if you're, you know, hopeful for a reconciliation, I personally think that maybe you don't need to do the block or the unfollow, but at least mute. I think mute feels like a good temporary solution that you can still like undo if anything changes at all. And it works for like however long you need it to work too. At least that's what I'm thinking. That's what I do. I mute. And then eventually when I know that like, well, this person's never going to be in my life again, I'll do the unfollow. I never ever do a block though. It feels so mean.
Yeah.
See, that's, I don't worry about being mean in that situation. I'm usually hurt or I'm just angry and I'm like, nah, I'm good. I'm out. Like that's the end for me. It seems like you still have hope at the end of that.
Harris, do you think there's a difference between them?
Well, I do. When you like on Facebook, if you unfollow somebody, or Twitter, if you just mute them, they don't know. So as far as they're concerned, everything is status quo. They may, you know, they may tweet at you, they may message you, but you never see it. But they don't get that whole, you know, you cannot connect with this person. Whereas block, it's obvious. So that does preserve the chance of getting back together when circumstances change. But that feeling that you mentioned early on about like, but what if we want to get back together? That's a noble thing to feel, but especially in the early days, that's not going to happen because whatever broke you up is still in effect and nothing has changed yet. And you got to have time to, first of all, you have to have time to process your feelings, and then you got to have time to kind of figure out what happened. You have to be able to say like, all right, how much of this was something that I did? How much was something that they did? And if it is something that, you know, if it's something that I did, what am I responsible for?
Yeah.
How do I fix that? How do I change things? How do I take responsibility for what I did? And it's very rare that breakups are 100% one-sided. They do happen. Mm-hmm. They do happen. But sometimes it's a case of it's like watching I'm trying to think which movie was. But oh yeah, Chasing Amy, where it's like, okay, yes, this was unacceptable, but also this is unacceptable. Like you have these attitudes that are making it hard, and you know this person has done things that are making it really hard. You can't really reconcile them until you've dealt with your own stuff first.
Yeah.
And you can't do that when you're constantly holding on to this idea of, but what if we just go right back to normal? Like nothing has changed. And then you get to do the dance remix of your breakup all over again, just a little bit faster and a lot more intense.
But that's an interesting thing then. Like, is there any kind of a signifier on the way out that you can maybe still attempt to be friends with someone, or, you know, your personalities match up in a certain way, but maybe not for, you know, romantic partnership or anything like that?
Yeah, I would say tell them. It's like, hey, listen, I would love to be friends down the line, but right now I have to, you know, this is going to really hurt me and I need to take care of myself. So I'm going to have to go away for a little while until I'm ready for this.
I mean, I think that I think what Ben's trying to say is like, do you know if you can stay friends, if you can keep following each other on social media? I think there are people who nobly try to remain friends after. And I think when you do that, though, you leave the door open kind of for embarrassing incidents maybe to happen if you've both moved on. I think I don't know if Jess, you wanted to share that story you were telling us about.
There are instances that, like, I think we all have to kind of learn how to navigate with social media and breakups and all that. And, like, so I have an ex, and it's been years now, but just, I mean, fairly recently, I noticed that late at night, he had liked a very old photo of mine. And, like, all I thought was just, oh, I feel so bad for you. You got caught. Like, that's what we don't want. When we're red-handed, sneaky scrolling, this is why you use an incognito account. This is why you make a fake account. You share it with your friends. It's very fun. I don't do that.
But sure.
No, I honestly don't care that much. I wish I did. But no, it was just like, I just felt like, oh, man, what do? I do nothing, right? And he does nothing. And we just all ignore it and walk away. And, like, that's okay.
Is that the move here?
Yeah, I think so. Because having steps between you and being able to get in contact with your ex can be important. Because I think all of us have had that moment of either late at night, you're lonely, or you've had like a couple of too many drinks, and you just want to reach out and just say, hey, thinking of you, or you know, sometimes get a little bit belligerent. It's like, look at how over you I am. And you wake up the next morning, it's like trying desperately how to unsend something that somebody already read. And having steps in the way keeps you from making that mistake too.
Well, okay, so I think some of the stuff we're talking about right now, I think everyone feels is not obvious, but these are things that people know they should do, and whether or not they do them ultimately boils down to how willing they are to take those steps, right? But I think another thing I realized or came across recently, my most recent breakup was like a few months before the pandemic. So that's fairly recent. And it's surprising how much tech has evolved lately that like the newest things, there are just so many new things that will crop up and pop up to remind you that like that this person used to be in your life. For example, for me, it was like a month after my last breakup, like my ex had removed me from his Google Home because like I think I had access to like use a voice command or something with a smart speaker there. And like he removed me and Google was like, hey, so-and-so removed you from their Google Home. I was like, I really needed to know that, Google. Thanks for telling me. I absolutely needed to know that my ex removed me. It was really hard. So I wanted to go over some of the other like surprises that can sneak up on you so that, you know, our listener and our viewer can be aware and start removing or preparing yourself for some of these to come. I don't think you can be fully 100% prepared all of the time, but maybe these are some things, maybe there are steps you can take to better protect yourself. I don't know, Harris, do you have any idea of some of these sneakier attacks?
Well, I think part of what's going to be important is knowing all of the notification settings on all of, like, as much of the tech as you shared as possible. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, that's how you get those little moments of, like, you know, my ex just unfriended me, or my ex just, you know, removed me from the Google calendar. And if you can preemptively change your notifications wherever possible, you can't in some cases, that does cut down on on those little surprises that crop up. And keeps you from feeling worse. And sometimes it's just a case of knowing them in advance. That's one of the issues with like photos, for example. Mm-hmm. When like Facebook will say, "Hey, remember?" You know, they'll do the year ago today, and it'll pop up a picture of something that you'd rather not remember. It's like, oh, thank you. I wanted to remember this awful time of my life. I appreciate that. So knowing how to go through and turn off those particular dates or even that span of dates makes it a lot, means that it's not going to crop up. And that can apply to anything. I've had that when a cat died and suddenly it's just like, hey, remember this? And it's like my in memoriam for my beloved pet. It's like, oh, cool. I needed to cry today. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And like, this is just something it feels like we have to live with now. Like Google in particular, because I have an Android device. I use Google all the time. So I get a lot of like, do you want to send this to your ex? Or, you know, do you want to see these memories all the time? And it's just like, yeah, there's so much in our lives now. Like all these apps, it's not just Google, but all these apps are so integrated that there's no way we're going to be able to turn off every setting, not be surprised when you open Venmo and forget that your friend's on Venmo, you know, stuff like that.
Venmo is the worst minefield. Let's just put that out there. Venmo is the trickiest.
Yes, that's like I was the one who brought that up first because, like, why is Venmo like that?
Right.
Why are all transactions public? Like, people can do some really weird things on Venmo and it's just out there for everyone to see. But especially for an ex, and then you see all of a sudden they're like doing three transfers a week with this new person and being like, like the note is you stink, you know, like go
cute
take
stuff.
A bath,
right.
You know, later on that week. And it's like, oh God, I know exactly what's going on here.
Yeah, or you see them, like, paying back for, like, you know, that night at Juliet's or whatever. It's like, oh, wait, that was the restaurant we used to go to. They're taking them to our place. And just...
Oof.
Yeah.
Oof.
Ouch. Yeah.
Yeah, that's worst way to find out your ex moved on. It's like, you see it on their Venmo account. Oh, really?
Yeah,
that's how you had. That's how you had to learn?
And it doesn't even feel malicious at that point. They were literally just doing a transaction. They're like, kind of trying to hide it. It's not like they're on Instagram throwing it in your face. Mm-hmm. Dang it.
They're just having fun. They're not doing anything. But sometimes we do it to ourselves too. If we're like actively stalking, sure. But I think there is something that companies can do. And I think I see the sentiment a lot on our YouTube live chat right now too, is that like, gosh, could some of these companies have an option? I think it wouldn't be that difficult, for example, to have Google Photos have an option where you can have a face that it's already identified as being in a lot of your photos. Just like, block this, like, don't show the pictures of these people for a year, and that'll be great. And Google Photos just doesn't have that. I think in Apple Photos you might do. I'm not very sure. But Facebook, Instagram, Google Photos, anything that, like, thrives and you know, mines your data like that should have that option to make your life just a little bit easier.
Yeah, there might be a way of kind of, like, backshotting that one, where if you use their machine learning to identify all those photos and then kind of quarantine them into one folder and then just put a, like, never show this, like, mark on that folder.
Right.
That might work. But
that still
is so many steps as opposed to just like, yeah, please don't show me this person for a while.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There should be a way to do that.
Yeah, like when you don't want to be thinking about that person. Like, you don't want to be spending the time to do that. But no, and I think, like, we were talking about Instagram earlier and like I don't, like, go back and delete old photos of exes and stuff. I just kind of let my life live out there as it is. I don't look back myself, so it doesn't bother me. But, like, I know, Sherlyn, I think, do you, like, clean up your grid?
Can I tell you my very dramatic stories? So, I think it was, like, 4 years ago I had one, like, pretty bad breakup. And then... that one was, I didn't remove the photos of me and that ex from that one, but what I did was I created a whole new Instagram account.
Oh, God. Holy cow.
So if you scroll all the way to the bottom of my current Instagram account, there's like, it's fairly recent just because like, it was so bad for me. I just created a brand new Instagram account. I couldn't do anything.
Oh, God, that's amazing.
I still have like 20 friends who follow that old Instagram account randomly going like, what happened to this account? I'm like, I've moved on. I don't use that account anymore. I'm pretty dramatic. But then for a more recent example, yeah, I had pictures of another ex on my public Instagram account this time around. I think at some point I was just like, well, I don't really need to have this person's face on my account anymore. Yeah. It just doesn't matter. I don't remember what drove me to do it, but I also didn't want to do the nuclear option of like deleting, like a hard delete. So what Instagram does allow you to do is to archive some of these pictures or posts that you just maybe for some reason don't like anymore. And you can still reinstate them if you want at some point to your grid. If you decided, it's not that much of a big deal. I don't mind, like, you know, letting people see that this was my past again. Then you can reinstate them. So I kind of like that. And that's what I did. I like that Instagram had that option.
Mm-hmm. That's nice.
Is that a good option, Harris, do you think? Is it effective?
I think so, yeah. Because it gives you the chance of looking back later when things aren't so aren't so intense. They aren't so bad. And also, if things improve. I mean, one of my most dramatic breakups happened in the LiveJournal era, and that got...
Oh, my...
That was fun, because you want to talk about really hard to go back and clean that out.
Oh.
I used to have so many secret tumblers dedicated to each partner. It was great.
Oh, my God. I'm you just worst. Make accounts on accounts. Look at you.
So many. I have like 10 tumblers. It's pretty
okay,
bad.
Okay, but speaking of siloing things, okay. Harris, mm-hmm. you said something about like tagging pictures mm-hmm. specifically with a person. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so a lot of photo apps, iPhoto does this, or the photo app on your iPhone does this. I'm sure Google has something similar. You can do this on macOS. You can tag photos. You can say, all right, you know, I want this tag associated with this photo, and you can do that as you go through. And I think that's a good idea to do just in general. I mean, I know we all take thousands of photos every day these days, but by doing that, by tagging them, and you make it a lot easier to search for them. And that has a lot of benefits because recently a friend of mine passed away and I was going through my phone desperately trying to find like old photos of all of us together. And it was really hard because, you know, I've got, you know, 50,000 photos on there and trying to figure out like, wait, what day did I take this? And if I could search specifically for his name, that would have made things easier. Mm-hmm. But doing that with the person you're dating, you have those photos like tagged, you know, date night with so-and-so or just their name. You can then search that, get them all in one place, and then either delete them or archive them, just quarantine them into another folder, and then hide that folder. And then you don't have those just popping up when you're looking through for that cute meme you saved or for the cat picture or whatever mm-hmm. that you wanted to send to your friends.
No, you had a clever, like, a way of preventing yourself from stumbling across ex's photos in your role. So yeah, what was that?
This is another way to like kind of prevent yourself from seeing things that hurt you. You know, like right the days after a breakup can feel very painful. And your photo album, your photo gallery is probably still filled with happy smiling pictures of the two of you if you scroll down a little too much, right? So one way I found effective to kind of just drown all of that out is just like take screenshots of things that you like screenshots of cute animals or cute babies. Just like fill your photo album with screenshots so that you don't have to, you can bury all of that stuff. I don't know if it's too avoidant if you do that, but I think it's a nice way to like make sure that the first few things you see whenever you open your photos app, if you're looking for a photo, you know, is something that makes you happy. Because also in the first few days of a breakup, no one's really going around taking pictures of like yourself smiling. Right. You're not really going out and having a lot of fun a lot, I don't think. Mm-hmm. So it's not as easy to just, or too much fun. You're not going out to take photos of things that make you happy all that much too. So I thought that was a, you know, a tip that people could learn from.
That's clever.
I really like that.
We have some contributions I also wanted to share. one of the members of our video team mentions that their ex posted a story on Instagram that was a picture of the words, I guess, "What kind of dumpster fire are you?" after they got engaged, or after they announced that they got engaged, which is like the subtweetiest of subtweeting things to do. you know, there's also people who are mentioning that sometimes people create other accounts to stalk their exes anonymously. Mm-hmm. Does that happen a lot, Harris? And is that advisable? Like to avoid these like accidental likes?
I think it happens a lot more than people like to admit because we're all human and we all want to know what our exes get up to, even if it's only for the chat, either if it's for the hoping they're going to get back together or for the schadenfreude of look at how miserable they are. I don't think it's really advisable, though. I think all that really does is just reemphasize over and over again, at least to yourself, that you've just gotten dumped and that you're single and miserable. And I think it's better to focus on yourself and improving and working on, like I said, processing your feelings, but also working on the things that make you feel better. Take this time to do mm-hmm. things that like really feed your soul and reconnect with the things that you love that maybe you weren't able to do because you didn't have the time because you were in a relationship, or take on new projects because you didn't have time, or because maybe your ex had a conflict with it. They just really didn't like your hobbies or something. And now you can re-engage with those. And those make you feel better. They make you feel like you've gotten back with yourself. Whereas just stalking your ex is just forcing yourself to stay in one place until the day comes when they've gotten over you and you haven't gotten over them because you're still just kind of like focused on them so much.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I think like, it sounds like honestly after a breakup, maybe a social media break entirely might be the best way. Cause like, that's kind of what I do. I'll just pull away. I'll just take a step. I need to focus on me, whatever. you know, and just, I don't worry about that stuff. So that's kind of my approach. Maybe that's avoidant too, but it feels healthy to just kind of not engage for a while.
Well, I think calling it avoidance is kind of a mistake because it's the old saying of doctor, doctor, it hurts when I do this. Well, stop doing that.
You're a good doctor.
That's a good point. Yeah.
if it keeps hurting when you poke it, maybe stop poking it for a while.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. I have a similar tactic, I think, just with withdrawing a little bit, but I'm pretty extroverted. So I still do a lot of like social media of other things. I actually rely on the internet to distract myself when I am, you know, suffering. So it's, I think, hard to just completely.
Same.
Yeah, exactly. So I need to see the things on like cat memes or something, you know, or dog surprises in a YouTube video. But it's inevitable when you're doing that, when you're just doing anything on the internet at all, more or less anything is going to remind you of your ex, especially if you had like a significant relationship together where you've spent a lot of your life together. Everything's going to remind you of them. So I think that doing the whole, like, the things we've said this episode so far, where you block them if you can, you remember to go through all your apps to like mute the notifications, like Harris said, just do all of that. It's going to help you minimize the hurt that can come up, because there's still going to be so much other hurt that you're not going to be prepared for or be able to prepare for.
And you're right. Everything reminds you of the ex. It doesn't matter. It's not just social media. It's literally, you'll look around your house and...
I mean, speaking of that too, I wanted to bring up like the fact that there's just so many things, right? Okay, so we talked about Venmo, we talked about you know, smart homes, like the Google Home thing. There are unexpected surprises in the.
What if you're trying to get an Uber and it autofills your ex's address?
Or on Spotify when you have the shared playlists.
Yes,
exactly.
That's a big one.
Those are two things I wanted to bring up. So Uber, I had my ex set up as a trusted contact, and yeah, Spotify is like shared playlists, or like TV streaming services where like you either have your exes logged into your account or you're logged into their account. What do? You got to spend money for Hulu now? Like, ugh. It's
it's the worst.
Yeah. So I think to wrap up the whole breakup part a little bit, I think the general advice seems to be go through your phone, go through all the tech things you have, and whatever you can do to like minimize those notifications. Really, like every single app on your phone, I'm saying, like, I feel like you need to go that in depth. Do all the like muting notifications if you can. And for tech companies out there that might be listening, if y'all can have a, to quote our viewer Mark Dell, "they're dead to me" option on your phone, on your services, that would be great. So like I enter someone's name or email and we go, "they're dead to me," you just unshare all our Google Docs, pull away all our calendars, stop showing up their photos, just all the things that you have control over. Do that for us. Make it easier.
DTM, dead to me. I like that.
There's some startup that's going to start just going through all the APIs and just using that.
Exactly. It's not that difficult.
It's a good idea. That's $1 million app idea right there, man.
That one's free, guys. Just credit me.
Take it.
Credit the Engadget Podcast and Dr. Nerdlove.
Right. Done.
Okay. But it's not all doom and gloom, right?
Yes, it is not all doom and gloom. So, like, you know, we are going to a new year, post-pandemic year. So, like, if you're looking toward a new relationship, are there good best practices for that sort of thing? You know, like, it's no longer Facebook official, now it's like Instagram grid official, or, you know, moving them from stories to grid. Like, does anyone know how to do that well?
Is there etiquette there, Harris? Do you think that, is there a too soon to post them to the grid sort of a thing?
I think it's fascinating because it changes every 5 seconds.
Yeah. Like,
I am an internet old enough to remember when Facebook official became a thing, and then suddenly it just became like, then it starts just turning into all of these other questions of like, okay, well, what about Instagram? What about these other services? When do you turn off your online dating app? And that becomes one of those things. I think it is unique to every relationship. I think it's really hard to say that we have to have a universal rule for all of these, because some people just have different relationships with different social media. A lot of people just don't take Facebook or Twitter or whatnot very seriously. So if you say, "Can I move you from, you know, my reels to my grid?" and they're going to look at you like, "What are you talking about? Why are you speaking Esperanto to me now?" So that, but it's just kind of like, it does bring up the question of what does social media mean in this day and age? Because now that we live so much of our lives in the public eye and showing it and curating it for everybody else, does having someone else in your photos or tagging them in stuff mean something? And I think right. that really kind of comes down to what it means to the both of you. Like, some people don't care. For some people, it is like of dire significance.
Oh, yeah.
I remember.
How do you even ask whether or not it's of dire significance? Because I think that as a straight male, specifically for me, I think that many straight men will be completely stupid about this. And then you'll be seeing someone for, you know, let's say a good number of months, maybe 4 months or 5 months or something. And all of a sudden, like, things feel a little bit weird. And they're like, you haven't posted anything about us. And I'm like, I barely post at all. But like, if that's important to you, like, how was I supposed to know that that's important to you? Like, you know, how do I even ask that question? Is my question to you, Harris.
Honestly, I think you literally just have to say it. That's one of the biggest problems is that we all tend to assume that our experiences are universal and or that our expectations are what everybody's feeling. And we just assume that that's what everybody wants. And that leads us into all kinds of problems. And that covers the entire gamut because you're going to have people who are like, wait, I thought we were exclusive. Well, we never said mm-hmm. anything about that. Mm-hmm. And what does exclusivity mean to you versus to you? And mm-hmm. that's, I talk about having the defining the relationship conversation. And I've kind of come to the idea of that it's not a single conversation. It is a series of conversations. And part of what you really want to do over time is kind of define your terms and just make sure that everybody's on the same page. And so you want to make sure that you understand, like, all right, here's the thing that is important to me. And here's how I feel about this, or here's what this means to me. Like, to someone who just shares a lot of photos with their friends, and their friends may be right. all across the gender spectrum, having pictures or tagging people in their Instagram stories may be no big deal. But to somebody for whom it is like, they kind of treat Instagram like the paparazzi. It's like, oh, look who they're dating this week. Right. Then that means like that's a more significant relationship. So talking about that, talking about yeah, here's what I do. And it feels weird to like bring it up. It feels awkward. But honestly, just embrace the awkward and just say, yeah, this is going to feel a bit of a strange conversation to have. But let's just power through this. Let's just figure out like we understand what this means so that we don't have a mm-hmm. fight over this utterly random thing, leaving each other going like, wait, why are we fighting over this?
I mean, I just remember like when I started dating my now fiance, by the way, very exciting.
Congratulations.
That just happened. It's very new. It's very exciting. Yeah. Well, so I'm actually going to ask you a question about that specifically. Mm-hmm. But like, I remember when I started dating him, it took us both a second to be like, can we post photos of us together? Because it was pretty soon after both of us had ended relationships. And like, we didn't want to hurt the other person. We didn't want to seem cruel or like, we didn't want people to think we were moving on too fast. You know, so many things. Yeah. It's very yeah. heavy in certain situations. It can feel heavy, these like mm-hmm. just posting a photo of you with mm-hmm. someone that you love or whatever. But in terms of the engagement, so I wonder, Dr. Nerdlove, if you can advise mm-hmm. me, is there a non-corny like way to announce an engagement? Is there a best way? Is there a bad way that I should avoid? Because like Instagram is kind of my platform of choice. Mm-hmm. I haven't announced this yet. Only my family and
exclusive to
know.
The Engadget podcast.
Yeah, this is exclusive news, everyone.
I'm thrilled to be here for this breaking story.
Yeah. What have you seen in your expertise?
I don't know if there is a non-cheesy way to do it that doesn't make it seem like you don't care. So you might as well just get cheesy about it. Like, it's an exciting time. Get excited about it.
You know, that's not my jam. Okay.
Embrace the corn. Embrace the cheese. Have a yummy engagement announcement post.
It's a no-win situation because no matter how you do it, somebody's going to get like come up with some reason about why it's wrong. It's like, right. How dare you, you know, how dare you ignore the plight of the terminally single by celebrating how like happy you are. I'm sorry. I can't stop. Sometimes you just have to live for your own happiness. And if you're thrilled and this is such a great thing, just like share your happiness and just let it be what it is.
Yeah. And I think that's the trick with most social media is just be genuine. People really respond to that. Like, you can tell mm-hmm. when someone is actually excited or actually having the best brunch ever or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. like it. I get that. I think I just need to figure out what I'm feeling. And then put it out there for the world.
The genuine, like you were saying, the genuineness is really important because it's so easy to kind of create and curate this image of yourself on social media. We all do it. Let's be real. Mm-hmm. And but it's that those moments of genuineness that really, really help us feel like connected to our friends, especially if we in they're in other cities or other countries and we can't see them right now. And seeing that human side of them is great, as opposed mm-hmm. to the Potemkin Village version of our lives.
Right.
I was going to say, to circle back really quickly to that difference between, say, a person who lives their life a lot on social media and a person who is very averse to social media, too. I think that conversation that you talk about having, Harris, is also a sign of the strength of your relationship. For me, like, I take a shit ton of photos. And I was like, can I swear? Never mind. A ton of photos. And my exes have been people who tend to frown upon like social media as like, oh, only like really needy and attention, you know, hungry people use that much social media and stuff like that. I'm just like, all right, well, that's, you know, like I used to feel, I think older versions of me who are less like confident and secure used to feel very judged by that. Mm-hmm. And now I'm just like, well, I'm going to do me. And if you're not comfortable with it, we can talk. If it's infringing on your privacy in a way, we can talk. But like, if you can't even have that conversation in a healthy way, if your partner refuses at all to hear your point of view, I think that that's the first sign for you that maybe you should work on something here. Like this, the issue is about something larger than whether or not you take or post pictures to your social media too much. That's what mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah. And I can understand why sometimes you might have a partner who feels like if you don't take a lot of photos or talk about the two of you together, then maybe they feel like you're trying to hide them. And God knows I've seen people who've tried to hide the fact that they're in relationships because they are kind of dogs. but also I know people who for whom their social media is primarily for work or for branding. Mm. And so they don't talk about their relationships much on there. And on the end, like what you were just saying about like dating someone who thinks it's stupid, like mm-hmm. it's one thing if they just like they don't like it themselves, but if they're judging you for how you use social media, that starts turning into a personal compatibility issue. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like it's one thing to say like, okay, this is not my particular cup of coffee, cup of tea, whatever, but you know what, do your thing, it's okay, I'll try to hide my rolling my eyes at it, but if they're like making a big deal about how you shouldn't or how you're dumb or flighty or attention hungry, then no, that's not cool, and that's usually a sign that the two of you probably aren't going to work. But also I've noticed that the people who complain about, especially, and it's such a gendered thing, it's almost always guys complaining about women doing this, you know, saying like women want so much attention, they're posting so much to social media. It's like, oh, I see, you're writing this from your cave, living where you live a monk-like existence, and nobody sees this on the Twitter account you just shared it on.
Yeah. All these accounts of pretty young women like posting on Instagram, they got a lot of followers, and I mean that's not just happening on its own. So that's these guys that you're saying that don't understand it are actually following these accounts. They appreciate the content, appreciate it from your partner as well. I mean, mm-hmm. why can't they be a content creator, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Ben, you were saying something before I interrupted.
I think the only thing is that or the important thing to remember with all of this is embrace the awkwardness. Because it feels awkward, maybe that means that you're just communicating. And if you communicate more, then hopefully it feels less awkward. And also, like, embrace the corn.
Mm-hmm.
Embrace, like, genuineness. Because mm-hmm. God knows, we don't have nearly enough genuineness on the internet.
I thought you were going to say nearly enough corn. Because
No. But everybody really does try to, like, keep their emotions at arm's length on the mm-hmm. internet, it seems. And I don't think that that's healthy for a human being to do, especially mm-hmm. all the time.
Like, you actually see this with the whole debate about Christmas movies, about the whole Die Hard is a Christmas movie, no it's not, and arguing about like the Hallmark Christmas movies or the Happiest Season or whatnot. A good friend of mine, Dr. Liz Powell, and I did a screening of the Christmas Wedding Planner, and they said something that kind of made me go, wow, you're right. A lot of people who talk about, like, you know, Die Hard or Gremlins or Lethal Weapon or the best Christmas movie, it's like, are you just uncomfortable with just like open expression of emotion and just cheesy happiness?
Ooh.
And that, when they said that, I had to go, ooh. Well, no, I don't like most Hallmark Christmas movies because they're horribly written and badly acted. But no, you may have a point there. You like, I'm gonna have to stop and think about this now.
Oh, you have to watch Love Actually or something. Yeah.
Mm.
Oh wow. Yeah, like an actual good holiday movie. You'd have to find one of those like cheesy and filled with warmth, but still well written and well produced.
Does it exist? I'm not sure.
So yeah, I think that's about all the time we have to talk about dating in tech today. So if you have any ideas or any experiences you want to share with us, make sure to send us an email at podcast@engadget.com. But it was such a great conversation. Thanks for joining us, Harris. It was so good.
This was great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Jess, what have you been working on?
Well, right now I'm working on calming my dogs down because they just ran in here from the other room. So sorry.
People
about
are
that.
Excited to see them.
Well, they're running. They're flying. Okay. They're excited. They like to go into the sun right by the door, and they just found it. Right now, what am I working on? Is that what you asked me? Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm working on a big secret game review. I can't tell you which one, but if you think real hard, I think y'all will figure it out.
I think most people know, yeah.
Yeah, that's coming really soon. I'm very excited about that. But then I also talked with the creator of Maquette. This is an indie game published by Annapurna Interactive. It's kind of about relationships, but it's a puzzle game. It's very cool. It's like a bunch of worlds inside of worlds inside of worlds. So I talked with them.
Where can I play this game?
Yeah, it'll be coming out soon. It's not out yet, but you can find out when you read my article next week.
Okay.
What else might I think that's basically it. The Game Awards are next week too, so I'm preparing for that. We're gonna just cover it.
Yeah, and as like everyone else, you probably have a lot of year end stuff and CES prep to do. I get it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
On my end, I wanted to, some people come to the Engadget podcast for weekly news, and this week I've been covering Qualcomm's Tech Summit, where the company announced the new Snapdragon 888, a very auspicious number in Chinese culture, I'd like to point out. But I wanted to quickly go over it, right? The Snapdragon 888 is the latest of Qualcomm's 800 series chipsets, and these chips usually go on to power the highest-end flagships, Android flagship phones of the year after. So 2021's phones are probably mostly going to use the Snapdragon 888. Now, this chip has a few interesting things, like new architecture, right? Instead of using big little cores, it uses a prime core, 3 big cores, and then 4 little cores, which is like completely new. I'd love to see how, what that means for performance. Qualcomm said something about like 35% better performance here, so I'd love to see what that means, how that translates, what kind of power efficiency we're looking at. But and some other interesting features include like the support for triple video and photo streams at once on your smartphone in 28 megapixel resolution for photos and 4K HDR for videos. So you can do things like, live overlaying of different scenes or different effects. You can get better HDR. There's now support for 10-bit HDR in the HEIF file format, because in the past the Snapdragon 800 series cards of the past could support 10-bit HDR, but when they saved the photos in JPEG, it had to be compressed down to 8-bit. So now you're going to get true color depth, true 10-bit color depth with that. The problem is HEIF is not a very widely supported format, in my opinion, so we'll see. Also, for the first time, the Snapdragon 888 has an integrated 5G modem, which if I were talking to Devendra about this, we would be yelling at Qualcomm for a little bit, but
I have nothing to add. I'm very sorry.
It's okay. This is me. You're being me when you talk about gaming now, right? I love it.
Sounds great. Sounds powerful. Sounds fast. I like it.
Yes. But the one new feature I think you and I can both relate to on this, and that I think stands out and is sometimes not mentioned enough, is that the Snapdragon 888 also comes with this feature by a company called TruePic, and it's part of the Content Authenticity Initiative, so CAI. And it's basically a cryptographic method of making sure or verifying the origins of a picture. So if it's taken on your phone and you use the CAI method to take it, it will have this cryptographic C around or on the picture. So, and it will stay on the picture as it is shared on other platforms. So this not only helps with things like making sure a picture is untouched on social media. You know, Adobe is also behind this. New York Times is also behind this initiative. Mm-hmm. So maybe we'll see in magazines some sort of method of supporting this to show that pictures are not retouched. But also, I think in fighting fake news and fighting the spread of misinformation, this has a great impact. So I'm excited to see.
I love that.
Have you heard about CAI? I mean, I think it was just a blip on the news stream, like when it was announced a couple months ago or so.
No, I must not have been on news that day. But exactly. Seriously, because that sounds like something that I think about a lot when we're thinking about the future of media and just literacy among the readership and the viewership. I think we're going to need a verification process for videos. I mean, deep fakes are a real problem. Yes. And then, photos. We need to know what's legit. And if this can do that, I think that's a really good tool. That's really, really powerful, potentially.
Yeah. I'm so excited to see this out in the real world. But right now, what's happening with the 888 is that it has a camera. It will support cameras that are compliant with the CAI, the Content Authenticity Initiative. So that, to me, is a standout feature. I hope we get to try it out in next year's phones. Great. The other thing I'm working on is the ThinkPad X1 Fold, and we will be talking about it probably more in depth next week on next week's podcast episode, so come back for that. But that's what we've been working on. How about what you're doing for fun, Jess? Do you have any recommendations for our audience, what they can do?
Yes, I do. I have a relationship-related recommendation.
Yay!
It's on Netflix. It's called Are You the One? And it's this MTV reality show. And it's kind of techie because they use an algorithm and they say algorithm a lot. So the premise is there's 20 young hot singles and they're all in this house, but there's one perfect match for each of them in the house. They've been algorithmically matched with one other person in the house and they don't know who it is. So the game is they have to all find their perfect match. And if they do, they all get $1 million to split. So it's like $30,000 each after taxes.
It sounds like Too Hot to Handle. Did you watch Too Hot to Handle?
I did, absolutely. I'll watch any of these shows. Yeah, exactly. But they have to like work together, but they're also just trying to bang each other. It's all very fun. It's
so they
stupid
have to
fun.
Find who's right for them. Gotcha.
Right.
I would love to watch that.
And one thing with it is it's very heteronormative, which I am always fighting for a little more diversity in these shows. But I know that the newer seasons are like everyone is fair game. It's very pan. It's very open. So I'm going to watch these Netflix seasons and then I'm going to try to find the more open, fun seasons too.
I also picked some relationship themed recommendations for our listeners this week. I mentioned this book earlier when we were talking with Harris, Attached. It was recommended to me by a friend. It's basically about your attachment style in relationships and the three main types. I think this is a very well-known framework already, but reading the book itself, it's a bit different where not only does it help you identify your own style, but also your partners or just people around you. I actually found this book not only just useful for romantic situations, but I actually found it more useful in other situations. I'm avoidant when it comes to my family, anxious when it comes to romantic relationships, and I'm secure with work relationships. And it's being able to identify my patterns of thinking when I'm avoidant helps me understand avoidant people, if that makes sense. And so this book also tells you how to behave, how to effectively communicate, how to work towards being more secure. And it's helpful for, I think, not only people trying to improve their communication, relationships, dating and all that stuff, but just in life. You people all have different attachment styles. And related to that, I always do a three combo, by the way, Jess, when I'm an overachiever. I have a lot of three things. My second recommendation, I'll just quickly shout out the Dear Therapist column on The Atlantic. I, you know, have recommended the book before by Lori Gottlieb. She wrote the book Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, but she also has a column on The Atlantic called Dear Therapist. And she covers she gives very helpful, I think, advice on how to navigate all sorts of difficult life situations. But I especially like, and I found most helpful right after my breakups, the advice she gives about how to navigate like breaking up with your partner. So give that a read whenever you need some help on these issues. And then finally, a modern recommendation is the Instagram account called the Matthew Hussey. It's this relationship coach as well called Matthew Hussey. He's pretty well known, but what I've found is that he caters more towards straight women, so women looking for men. But the advice he gives, I keep sending to my friends. I keep sending to like my female friends who have problems, not just getting out there, but also just, I mean, talk problems in relationships and dating, not just general problems.
I got some real problems.
You got some real problems, girl. Follow this guy. But yeah, no, I think his videos are very easy to understand. He gives very actionable advice. So if you prefer your advice coming from Instagram and not a book or a column, you can follow the Matthew Hussey on Instagram.
Nice. Well, hey, I'm going to throw another one out there. I'm going to overachieve.
Yes. Do it.
Where should we begin with Esther Perel? It's a podcast.
Oh.
Yeah. Esther Perel, she's a relationship therapist. So this podcast is literal, like actual recorded sessions of her with couples, and it's single sessions, and they go through some pretty cool issues. And she just has a really, she has a ton of expertise, and she just has a really global, holistic view of these relationships. You can tell she really gets to the heart of the issues really fast. So where should we begin? That's a good one too.
That is a good one. I mean, I think that one of the things people do after breakups is look for things to distract themselves with. And then this might be definitely a podcast upon.
You can relate to a lot of it, yeah.
That's it for our episode this week. Everyone, I hope you enjoyed it. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Jess online at
Jess Condit on Twitter or Jess L. Condit, C-O-N-D-I-T-T, on Instagram.
If you want to have a debate with me about what movie is a holiday movie, you can find me on Twitter at Sherlyn Lowe. Email us everything you thought about this episode and the whole podcast and what we can do better. Send us an email to podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes, please, because that'll really help people find us. And then subscribe on anything that gets podcasts, including Spotify.